This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. The Indiana University Northwest campus has received some money. In this case, we have a $5 million grant that will increase the number of students who graduate with degrees in the STEM fields, as well as an opportunity to get a grant that will help students who are going to college for the very first time make that transition a little easier to handle these days. Let's talk about it with Kristen Heisken, who is the Associate Dean for Student Success in the College of Arts and Sciences on the IU Northwest campus. She also, by the way, is an Associate Geology Professor. And Kristen, thanks for joining us on the program today to talk about two very important grants coming in.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for inviting me here today.
Well, first, let's talk about the major grant. The $5 million grant is coming in from the federal government. Tell us more about that and how it's going to be put to use at IU Northwest.
Well, we were eligible for this grant because we are an Hispanic-serving institution. And so Hispanic-serving institutions are institutions where more than 25% of their full-time student body are Hispanic students. And so because of that designation, we were able to apply for this funding. Mm-hmm. And so this particular grant focuses on the STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And so we're going to be using it for all sorts of things in the STEM disciplines at IU Northwest. And so really the focus is on curriculum development in the STEM disciplines, STEM services for students, so STEM-specific support services, new and enhanced partnerships with Ivy Tech and area high schools, and also infrastructure enhancements that will directly support the grant initiatives.
I think maybe people don't realize that the IU Northwest and the Ivy Tech Community College campuses in Gary share the same campus, and I know that's going to be a big advantage, that having both of the learning institutions on the same spot is going to make this enhanced program even better, won't it?
Oh, you bet. And, one of our initiatives is the construction of a STEM resource center on mm-hmm. campus. And so this will be a shared space also between IUN and Ivy Tech students. And so the idea is to, just really further the relationships between STEM students at Ivy Tech and IU Northwest. And, our hope is to, of course, Ivy Tech is a two-year institution. Our hope is to even further acclimate Ivy Tech students to the IUN campus and ease their transition for those who want to pursue a four-year degree in one of the STEM disciplines.
I understand that this program in particular has a very unique name, which will benefit not only English-speaking as well as Hispanic-speaking students. Will you tell us more about that and how it came up with the name?
So the name of the grant is Triunfos, and so that is the Spanish word for triumphs. And it's really an acronym, transforming. That's the TR, Indiana University Northwest. Mm-hmm. Opportunities in STEM. That was it. And
well,
so
it is
an acronym, but that's how it arose.
What's very clever. It does certainly speak to the point that it is an opportunity to make a transformation on the IU Northwest campus with the help of Ivy Tech Community College to help make these STEM learning opportunities certainly a lot stronger.
And the entire focus is on student success, and so that is where the concept of triumphs or triumphos comes into play.
Okay. We mentioned at the outset of our conversation it's a $5 million grant, and that's going to be spread over, I understand, 5 years. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
That's good to hear. Now, the other grant that has come in from the federal government is going to come to Indiana University Northwest and maybe in a way to help certain students that might be involved in the STEM program and learning, but certainly in any first-year students to help make the transition from high school into college a lot easier. Will you tell us about the Indiana Department of Education and the Indiana Commission for Higher Education grant that's coming to IU Northwest?
Oh, yes, that's right. And so we named that program Red Hawks Rise. And that has already come to IU Northwest. And as you know, we have had a summer bridge program here at IU Northwest for several years now. And so we used that funding for the summer bridge program. But this year, in partnership with our Office of Admissions and other departments on campus, we expanded the program. And so I think that we did an evening meet and greet mm-hmm. with incoming students, where they were able to connect with the folks who will help them access various resources on the campus, but also, and importantly, they were able to connect with student peer mentors. And so these are folks who, you know, they were freshmen or first-year students at one time themselves, and it's just a way for incoming students to connect with, more recent students who have been there recently. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they can talk to faculty and they can talk to professional staff on the campus. But I think that students, you know, peer mentors are able to relate to incoming students, you know, just a little bit differently and maybe a little bit better than the faculty and staff can. But really, one of the centerpieces of the Red Hawks Rise program is that to keep the momentum going, the students then have lunchtime check-ins throughout the semester.
That's
and
great.
So they can then, you know, after they have the summer bridge program, those students and also others on campus, any first-year student on campus can, you know, have a lunchtime check-in and have conversations with their peer mentors and also, you know, get connected to resources. So, you know, if they don't know about the math lab or the writing center or, you know, whatever it is that they need, they can help get connected to those resources.
I understand that IU Northwest is rather distinctive in getting this type of grant to be able to get this type of program going.
I hope so. I don't know if we're distinctive, but certainly we've had great success with this with these summer programs, and we just hope to expand them even more.
Are there any hopes that this program in particular, the Red Hawks Rise program, are going to continue on into the next school year coming up that begins next year?
Yes, it will. It will continue on, we believe, in perpetuity.
Is there any place online that folks can find out more about not only the support for this Red Hawks Rise program, but also the other grant that we've talked about in particular? It's going to help create the STEM Resource Center and all the other facilities for IU Northwest?
Well, so the Triumphos grant, this is brand new, mm-hmm. and so soon there will be more information on the website for the Summer Bridge, Red Hawks Rise. If students simply go to iun.edu and just search for Summer Bridge, they will find our website.
Kristen Heiske is the Associate Dean for Student Success at the College of Arts and Sciences, IU Northwest Campus in Gary, and she's also on the faculty as an Associate Geology Professor. Kristen, thanks very much for telling us all about these great programs, in particular the new program that is getting help and being created on getting students who are graduating degrees with STEM fields, and also for the help that summertime students have been able to get to continue on into the fall semester if they've been starting college. Thanks for being with us to talk about them today.
Thank you very much.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Jesse Carbonda has been the executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council for almost 14 years now, when he took over in charge of the largest environmental policy group in Indiana. And he has told his staff and other members, too, and his board of directors that he is going to be looking to the future. In fact, he's going to be stepping down as the executive director over time. And the search will be to find another executive director of the HEC. But we have him with us today to talk about what's ahead for him, as well as what he's been doing with the HEC over the years. Jesse, thank you very much for spending time with us today here on Regionally Speaking.
Thank you, Chris. It's always good to be with you.
I always get a kick out of having a chance to talk with you. Of course, it's more exciting during the legislative sessions. I get a little a little emotional at times, I know, but that's the way that the industry is these days. They bring a lot of emotions out in not only supporters, but even some detractors of the environment. But we're always glad to have you with us to talk about things. First, if I may, let me ask, what is in the future for Jesse Carbondo? What are you like to do in the months ahead once you get to step down from the Hoosier Environmental Council?
Well, thank you so much, Chris. And it's, again, been such a pleasure to be on your show over the years. And, you know, running the Hoosier Environmental Council has been the honor of my life. And there is so much challenge yet to address. But I've been feeling a calling recently to really begin to focus my energies on the extinction crisis and the fact that our society here in America and globally is so addicted to factory farming. And so I'd like to channel my energies to addressing these two extraordinary challenges and to do so through writing and hope that this provides a platform to then be able to speak about these issues across the country to try to change people's consciousness about the fact that, you know, we are in an extinction crisis that we haven't seen in 65 million years and that factory farming is causing an innumerable array of problems in terms of the brutality to animals. We lose 70 billion land mammals, land animals each year across the world. And it has all sorts of effects on our own health, on the health of animals, on our environment. So I'd like to really focus on these extraordinary issues of our time.
What are you thinking that you would like to do? Would you do, like to do some writing? Would you like to do some other advocacy work?
Right. Well, I think it will be a form of writing to begin with. And then once again, hopefully that provides me a new platform to really talk about these issues across the country and be able to really lift up the amazing array of organizations that do already exist in America so that we can get more of the public engaged. I think, you know, we spend too much time in terms of the public discourse on things that really don't matter when we really need to put the public's attention on the things that do. And among them is the fact that our planet is still suffering these extraordinary problems, even with the extraordinary number of talented people. And we need to marshal more of the talent of the American people towards addressing these extraordinary crises.
I know you've spent an awful lot of your time here with the HEC dealing with the problems we have in Indiana, a lot of them because of centering around pollution, actually. I guess with Indiana ranking pretty high among the most polluted states in the country. But I know you've always been working for positive change, and I know a lot of what the Hoosier Environmental Council has been able to do has been able to work toward positive change and making the Indiana environment a little cleaner, a little safer for everybody to live and to work in. Will you take a time and go think back over the last few years, certainly, but maybe even longer if you choose, about some of the things that you've been able to help the Hoosier Environmental Council do over the last more than a decade?
Thank you for the question, Chris. You know, it is nothing we could accomplish could be done without extraordinary partners and extraordinary members across the state in partnership with four-sided lawmakers and other elected officials. You know, from a legislative perspective, what stands out to me as the biggest achievements is defeating legislation that, had it gone through, would have methodically dismantled our ability to address statewide environmental problems and would have also tied the hands of local governments to address certain environmental problems. So I think the biggest category of achievement that the environmental movement has secured, for which HEC, Hoosier Environmental Council, has played a very important role, is stopping things from getting worse and giving our state government and local governments the continued authority to address persistent environmental problems. You know, looking at this a little bit more narrowly, we can talk to organizing victories that we've had in different parts of the state. You know, when I think about Northwest Indiana, I think about our efforts to work with local groups to successfully block a factory farm from being built on the outskirts of Valparaiso. I think about the lawsuit that we are currently continuing to pursue with the Environmental Law and Policy Center to try to hold ArcelorMittal, now Cleveland Cliffs, accountable for the pollution it caused a couple of years ago. I think about the partnerships we've had with environmental justice groups in East Chicago and in Gary to hold polluters accountable where they are causing a great burden of suffering on low-income communities, communities that are often communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a broad sweep of kind of the impact I think we've had.
Do you think that even though it's not been quite as successful as you would like to, as speaking for the Hoosier Environmental Council, would like to it to be, do you think that the General Assembly has been able to make some moves over the last few sessions to try to make things better, even though not everything has gotten passed or even been introduced?
Yes. Well, I think that, again, when I think about the impact that we've had in the legislature, it has most of all been to try to stop things from getting worse. And that itself is an achievement. But in terms of progressive policy, you know, I think about working with Lake County lawmakers to pass a bill to require lead testing in schools. That was a very positive, proactive achievement. I think about the enactment of a mass transit law that currently applies to central Indiana, but it's something that we've been pressing to make statewide, which empowers local governments to be able to enact a local transit tax that allows them to facilitate the growth of buses and bus rapid transit and other mass transit technologies. I think about the progress that we made last decade to significantly increase investment in rooftop solar and energy efficiency that unfortunately the legislature dismantled a few years after those achievements. So we do see signs of very meaningful progress, but we need to marshal a lot more Hoosiers to get invested in the endeavor of talking to their lawmakers on a very consistent basis, to build relationships with those lawmakers, even when it seems frustrating because the lawmaker has a very different worldview than we might. You know, we've just got to be persistent, even though the terrain in the legislature is unquestionably very hard.
Do you think that the part of the effort that you've been able to accomplish and continue to accomplish, because you're not done with the job yet with the Hoosier Environmental Council, is to making sure that the coalitions get built and they stay in place so that you get the wide of diversity of people, of organizations, of political leaders involved in dealing with the environment?
Absolutely, Chris. You know, I think one of the hallmarks I would like to think of my leadership of HEC over these almost 14 years is this persistent commitment to building the tent and drawing in people of faith who obviously represent the majority of Hoosiers, and to draw in authentically green-minded businesses, to draw in young people for whom the climate crisis is foremost in their minds. So I think what gives me hope in the midst of this very difficult landscape in the legislature is the fact that there are so many constituencies in Indiana that we have yet to marshal. We've certainly made progress, but we have yet to marshal. And, you know, one of the priorities that I've especially emphasized these last few years that I hope my success will continue, Chris, is to really build our footprint in rural Indiana because we do have a robust urban environmental justice program in Indianapolis, one that we would like to revive in Northwest Indiana. But we also have to keep in mind that there are really systemic environmental justice issues in rural Indiana, where groundwater, where drinking water wells mm-hmm. are under threat from an array of factors, whether that's leaking landfills or factory farms or coal ash waste pits or agrochemicals seeping into our ground.
Do you think that's when the real emphasis has changed a bit from urban to rural, when the issues of factory farms and of problems with coal ash disposal have come about, and that's really gotten the attention lately?
Well, I think we've got to work in tandem. I mean, I think that both urban communities and rural communities in different ways bear great burdens of environmental pollution. You know, in urban Indiana, of course, Northwest Indiana foremost comes to mind, and what happens in East Chicago and Gary, where there are, you know, hundreds of hazardous waste sites and hundreds of underground storage tanks and dozens of Superfund sites. So, you know, we have to keep our eye on just the reality that these poor communities are bearing so much of a pollution burden. But at the same time, we have to appreciate again that low-income rural communities also bear a great burden, again, because so much industry gets concentrated there.
Well, Jesse, do you think that now that your board of directors is off on their own task in helping to look for a successor for the position, do you think that it's just kind of getting things together and helping whoever comes in to be able to take over early next year?
Well, you know, I think life will continue the same for the next few months, most notably because next month, Chris, we will be hosting Greening the State House.
That's right.
Which will be, for the second year in a row, a virtual event, with the recognition that the Delta variant remains very much out there and there are breakthrough infections. And so we hope all of our friends in Northwest Indiana can join us for that. That event is at heckweb.org/GTS. And it's an opportunity for people to, again, continue to be replenished with knowledge about the pressing issues facing Indiana, and also to be very prepared for the 2022 legislative session, which will be here before we know it. And we'll be having a panel discussion, I might add, Chris, expressly focused on how we can think of a new paradigm for Northwest Indiana, Southwest Indiana, which, again, regionally speaking, have borne such a burden of pollution.
Well, Jesse, we'll have a chance to talk again very soon, it looks like, with Greening the State House coming up and a lot of other things yet come for the Hoosier Environmental Council. And we thank you for spending time with us to talk about what's happened so far with the Hoosier Environmental Council and look at what may happen again soon. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Jesse Carbondo is the Executive Director of the Hoosier Environmental Council. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. The Food and Drug Administration and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have authorized COVID-19 booster shots for certain Pfizer recipients. But what exactly does that mean for individuals who've received the vaccine? Well, Side Effects Public Media's Steph Whiteside spoke with Bart Hagston. He's the administrator for the health department in Jackson County in southwest Illinois to get some answers to some frequently asked questions. Here's a conversation.
Let's start with the basics. Is the Pfizer booster shot only for people who got the Pfizer shot initially?
So what the CDC and the FDA have approved are booster doses for those that have received the Pfizer vaccine as part of their primary series. So if you've received Moderna or Johnson & Johnson previously, booster doses are not authorized yet. The federal authorities continue to look at the data surrounding those vaccines, and I think we'll see booster doses for those in the coming weeks or months. But for right now, it's only Pfizer.
What's the time frame on getting a booster shot?
Right, yeah, it just has to be at least 6 months since your second dose of Pfizer. It could be longer.
Which Pfizer recipients are eligible for the shot?
This is where some of the confusion has set in. CDC has recommended that the following three groups of people should receive a booster dose of Pfizer. Those are people age 65 and older, residents in long-term care settings, and people age 50 to 64 with certain underlying medical conditions. And then in addition to that, CDC has recommended that people in another two categories may receive a booster dose, and those are people age 18 to 49 with underlying medical conditions, or people age 18 to 64 that face increased risk of COVID-19 exposure and transmission because of their occupational setting. So that could include healthcare workers, first responders, congregate care staff, educational staff, food workers, manufacturing, corrections, postal workers, public transit, grocery store workers. So those are all of the categories. So three of them in the should receive a booster category, two in the may receive a booster.
You mentioned underlying medical conditions. Can you talk a little bit more about exactly what that means?
Sure. So people with certain medical conditions are associated with a higher risk of severe COVID-19. And so some of those conditions include cancer, chronic kidney disease, chronic lung disease, including asthma, diabetes, Down syndrome, various heart conditions, various immunocompromised states, liver disease, overweight or obese, pregnant or recently pregnant, sickle cell disease, smoking, including current or former smokers, organ transplant recipients, those that have had a stroke or cerebrovascular disease, or those that have substance use disorders. So it's a pretty extensive list. We'll have a link to that list on our website so people can see what all of those conditions are.
Some people are saying the need for boosters is a sign that the vaccines don't work. Can you talk more about that and why people may need boosters even with a successful vaccine?
You know, the vaccines overall continue to be very effective against severe disease, hospitalization. I think everybody has probably seen the numbers that SIH and other hospital systems are reporting as far as the number of people they have admitted to the hospital and how few of those are vaccinated individuals, and especially those that are in the ICU or on a ventilator, how few of those are vaccinated individuals. That's information that I think really jumps out to people when they see those numbers, and that tells people a lot as to how effective the vaccines are pre-Delta and during Delta.
Pfizer is just one of three vaccines. Should people who got the Moderna or Johnson & Johnson shots expect to get news about boosters soon?
I mean, I think the boosters, I think we might hear more about boosters for Moderna within the next several weeks. Johnson & Johnson might be a little longer, but Johnson & Johnson didn't hit the market as early as Pfizer or Moderna. So everything takes time. It's all based upon FDA and CDC reviewing the data available and looking at how long until the benefits of the vaccine last before they begin to wane. And even though the data might show that the benefits start to wane, it's not an immediate drop-off of that protection. You know, they slowly lose effectiveness over time, and that's why a booster might be needed. But again, you still have that protection of the original series you received.
Finally, the most important question. If someone is eligible for a booster shot, how do they go about getting it?
So if someone is eligible for a Pfizer booster, they can seek that out at many locations throughout the community, including pharmacies and other medical providers, and at Jackson County Health Department and other local health departments.
That was Jackson County Health Administrator Bart Hagston talking about the Pfizer booster shots now available.
And that is Side Effects Public Media's Steph Whitesides. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for joining us on tomorrow's program. Among our guests on the program, we will have Karen Lauerman, who is the Executive Director of the Lake County Economic Alliance, and she will bring us up to date with a number of local economic development projects that are underway or about to be underway here in Northwest Indiana. And we hope you can join us for tomorrow's Regionally Speaking.